This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.
Callum McSwiggan on FUBAR Radio.
Waiting and waiting for something that ain't too complicated. When I should have looked in, I guess I've been in all the wrong places.
To the Callum McSwiggan Show. Today I'm joined by the incredibly lovely Guy Pusey. How are you doing, Guy?
I'm very well, thank you very much. I'm feeling very lovely. Thank you, that's very sweet.
Are you feeling nice and cool in this lovely air-conditioned studio?
Yes, it's muggy outside, but we're very nice and cool in
here. It's more than muggy. We're just not prepared for this weather in the UK,
No, I think that actually you could rent this out as an apartment when you're not using it, because people would gladly sleep under this desk just thinking...
I could sit here all day and talk about apartments in London and the most ridiculous listings that go up on spare room.
They're insane.
But we're not going to do that. let's talk a little bit about you. So you are over at Grazia.
I am.
And you, what is your role again? Celebrity director.
Which sounds
fancy.
Yeah, it sounds really fancy. When my business cards are arriving soon, and I'm just going to just like start pinning them around town on lampposts and things. It just means basically that I'm head of celebrity content and news and things like that, and reaching out to the celebrities who we would put in Grazia, which is just really fun. I feel really very lucky. I'm quite new, so I'm still learning.
Okay. I mean, it must be such a fascinating world to dive into.
It is. I think that people present that sort of, it's who they are and then who they want people to see them as. So every time you interview someone and they put on their sort of persona to be quoted, and then obviously your dictaphone goes off. And you say the interview's over, and then they change completely. They've been really, really nice to you. I'm sure you get this. They've been so, so nice to you, and then your dictaphone goes off, and you say goodbye, and they're like, nice to meet you, Ben. And I'm like, I'm not going to name who did that, but it was just like...
Did that actually happen? Someone called you Ben?
Yeah, so I'll tell you her name later, but it was just like, I've been sitting with you for about 4 hours, and my name has come up several times.
Oh my gosh, that hurts my feelings.
It hurt my feelings.
But there must be some incredible people out there who you've got to work with, and you've seen their kind of persona out there in the world, and you have this idea of them as a celebrity, and then you've met them and they have matched that. Because I'm sure there are a lot of people like that.
Yeah, I went to Cannes recently to interview Chloe Sevigny, who's an American actress who I absolutely have always idolized. And when the opportunity came up, the organizers asked her, would you mind flying to Cannes for a couple of hours to sit down with Chloe Sevigny? And I was like, sure.
Sure, why not?
I think I can clear that in my schedule. But you do go and you think, God, what if she's horrendous?
Yeah.
What if this woman who I've idolized for 20 years and loved her work for all this time, what if she's horrible? Mm-hmm. And then you sit down and she's like, I love your shoes. Where are they from? And I'm like, they're most expensive things. I could not afford these shoes. I got them from like a charity shop. She's like, are they churches? She's like, you got holes in them. You need to go to a cobbler. And she was so nice and lovely. But it's such a relief when people deliver on the persona they've presented to you in the media.
Absolutely. I hear a lot of people these days, and I don't know if you have any comment on this, but there's kind of like an old school way of being. And I hear about, you know, celebrities who've been in the industry a long time. Somebody recently mentioned Jerry Halliwell to me as being an example of somebody who is, you know, just as lovely as she appears. Right. And she will give you the time of day. And, you know, if she's booked to do a job for an hour, she will be present and she will be there for
the whole hour
and throw herself into it. And it's kind of old school way of thinking. But apparently some of the newer celebrities.
Exactly. I think that these people, you know, a lot of them are wonderful, but you do see sometimes a certain entitlement because, you know, they've got social media presences that mean they've got people telling them how wonderful they are, like every second of their day. And I don't judge them for believing that a little bit. So if they come in and don't really want to fulfill the 45 minutes that was promised, then they kind of think, okay, well, we're done now. And it's like, oh, no, but we're not.
Yeah, we're really not.
We're really not. we've got obligations. You know, there's, you know, I used to work at a newspaper and it was sort of, you know, I've got a 2-page feature due tomorrow and that's 1,000 words. And right now you've probably said about 35. So I'm going to kind of need you to stay.
Just a little tiny bit more. It's interesting you mentioned social media there. Do you think that is changing, you know, the way we kind of perceive celebrities? And, you know, you have the whole influencer world, which I guess I even fall into. And I think it's... I don't want to say toxic because, you know, I owe my career to it and I think there are so many wonderful things that come out of the kind of influencer celebrity world. But I think there are a lot of drawbacks.
There really are. I was recently interviewing Misha Barton and Justin Bobby because they're in that new Hills reboot. Because Misha Barton has joined the cast. Because
is she the one in the OC?
She was Marissa.
Oh, I loved Marissa.
And I loved Marissa. And it was to be in her presence was just, oh my God.
Yeah.
God, this is so
She's insane. So pretty.
She's so pretty.
Yeah.
And so she was in the OC, and the OC inspired the TV show Laguna Beach, which was billed as the real OC. And then the Laguna Beach spun off into The Hills. And so Misha Barton is appearing in a reboot of a reality TV series that was a spin-off of a show that was inspired by the show that she starred in.
Sure.
And I was like, what? And she was like, isn't that meta? But what she was saying is, when I met her, is that you used to tune into these shows to see every week what these people had been up to, and you couldn't wait to see if Audrina and Justin had made out at that party, and you didn't know from their Insta stories, and you didn't know from their posts. And so now it's changed the way that we view these famous people. You know, you used to pick up a magazine or watch an interview on television because you hadn't actually, you weren't aware of what they've been up to lately.
Yes.
And they would tell you. They would go on the Graham Norton show and be like, you'll never guess what I've done. And you're like, I know what you've done.
We know, we saw it.
I know, but like, you know, I was at Glastonbury. I'm like, I know you were.
Do you think that comes with that a certain entitlement for people to know what's going on with these people's lives?
Yeah, I think so. And I think that's particularly affected someone like the Duchess of Sussex at the moment. People are arguing at the moment about whether or not she has a right to say, please don't photograph me at Wimbledon. And that's something we've been discussing a lot in the office this week. And people think that they have a right to every aspect of her, partly because we're paying for the family, but partly because we're so used to getting all of it.
Yes.
You know, she used to have, when she was just an actress before she met Harry, she had social media profiles, she had a blog, she gave a certain element of her life out for people to scrutinize and, you know, interact with. And so I think people now are a little bit like, you gave us a chunk of your life and we want more, or we still deserve that chunk, even though life's changed and she's had a child and people get older and people delete social media profiles. Yeah. People sometimes, I think, hold on to a standard that was set a long time ago.
Yes, and people do change and people do say, yeah, oh, I want a bit of privacy
now.
Yeah,
exactly. I have a right to delete my Twitter,
yeah,
but then people might be like, where's, I mean, I'm not famous enough for people to care really, but
I care.
But people, you know, people might still see me and think that they have a, that they can still get in touch. You know, someone in a bar, this didn't happen to me, but a friend of mine who has a sort of quite provocative or sexual social media presence because they you know, they are very sex positive, mm-hmm, and they feel themselves and that's great, but they go to a bar and maybe someone will recognize them on Twitter and sort of pat them on the ass and they'll turn around and say, how dare you? And they say, oh, but you know, on Twitter, mm, you love that kind of stuff on,
yeah,
Twitter.
That's really interesting.
But it's like, no, my Twitter presence is me being that kind of person. That doesn't mean you can grab me on the ass in a bar. And I think people do that as well, that confusion between the persona on social media and the real life.
Absolutely. I also hear a lot of people kind of saying things like people deserve the criticism they get and they deserve to be... Sometimes I feel like people are being bullied,
yeah,
and people say that they deserve it because they have a career out of putting themselves out there. But I often think, you know, like, actually, this person's career is to be an actress or to,
exactly,
be a musician, and they shouldn't have to sign up to this intense scrutiny, the,
right,
criticism and the bullying just because they want to pursue that thing that just so happens to make them famous.
Exactly. I mean, there are certain people who definitely caught the press in to a certain extent more than others,
yeah,
but even if you're calling the paparazzi on yourself, which some people do, of course, even if you're doing that, like, that doesn't mean that you should be verbally attacked and assaulted,
yeah,
and called disgusting or scrutinized in that way. You know, if you're launching a beauty line, you have to accept that some people will think that it's gorgeous and some people will think it's not. You know,
yeah,
you have to accept that sort of level of criticism, and if you can't handle that, then you probably need to do something else.
Yes.
But there, gosh, it's just got so terrible in the last couple of years, that level of trolling and people just sort of sending these comments out into the ether.
And I think it's Twitter. I love,
yeah,
Twitter.
I love Twitter,
it's
but
my favorite
it's
social media.
It's really dangerous.
It's,
it can be dangerous.
It's horrible. It really is.
And these people who have the sort of, you know, egg profiles or pictures of people who they are not.
Yes.
Are saying, ugh.
I've had before people send me abuse, and they will have their profile picture as one of my friends who is also an influencer or a YouTuber or something, and they actually adore that person.
Right.
And I'm sat there thinking, that's my friend.
Yeah.
You've got them as your profile picture. What do you think they would,
yes,
think,
exactly,
if they saw you doing this? But it doesn't seem to compute in the,
no,
same way.
Exactly. Like, it's really, really evident in sort of Stan Twitter with people who love Beyonce and maybe hate Nicki Minaj, and so, but you know, if one person says Beyonce can't sing, then all the Beyonce faces,
yes,
will just be like, fuck you, Nicki Minaj is a whatever, and Nicki Minaj and Beyonce have absolutely no involvement in this,
yeah,
no,
yeah,
beef whatsoever,
yeah,
but it's just this piling on of Stan Twitter can be really dangerous as well. But sometimes it starts funny. Sometimes, like, it starts with a funny meme.
And then next minute
and
it's
then the
escalated
next one, suddenly
into,
you're,
yes,
just like, you're actually threatening to, like, I'm going to find out where you live.
Yeah, it's terrifying. It's terrifying. But what I will say is that there are a lot of people putting out lots of positivity into,
yes,
the world. And this is my segue,
oh,
into talking
segue
about your podcast, which is On the Latch.
It is.
And I think, I'm going to get the number wrong. Is it six or
it's
seven?
It's six. It used to be seven, but he moved.
Oh, so I was right.
Six or seven was correct. We had seven, and then he moved to Reading, which is a lovely place, but it means he couldn't quite commute in. So there's now six of us, and we're all very, very different. We met on Twitter, which is another thing that Twitter does good,
yeah,
things. And we just kind of get together, and we always disagree, and we have very different life experiences and very, very different levels of oversharing.
And you all identify as queer?
Yes.
A queer men or
queer
just
men?
Queer,
yeah, queer men of... there are two, John and I are the white ones.
Sure.
We just really wanted to make sure there was a diverse expression of opinion, and make, you know, we talk a lot about racism in the gay community and on Grindr and that sort of weird profiles of, like, not interested if you are this sort of person or that sort of person. And we take dilemmas and people get in touch asking for advice and things like that. So it's been really, really great. We just finished series three.
I know you cover an awful lot of important and serious topics, but I've got written here in front of me that one of the questions that you tackled was, can you be vegan and still swallow?
Oh, yeah, that was a really fun one. We really, really disagreed with that because one of us had recently gone vegan. And we just had this big discussion about, because it's an, do you know what I mean? It's an animal product.
Yeah. I understand what you're saying.
It's like milk. It's like cheese. It's like eggs.
Not that we want to relive the entire episode that you've already done. But I just see it as being vegan is about preventing animal suffering.
Yes, exactly. That was the eventual conclusion.
Because you can have honey as a vegan.
Can you?
Can you not?
I don't know.
Semen and honey, who knows what's allowed?
Semen is the honey of dick.
It's dick honey. Very good.
We should trademark that. But no, yeah, the eventual conclusion was that we were sort of playing devil's advocate with the new vegan in our group. So we just sort of wanted to see him squirm. And he did. So
it was
sometimes you just want to introduce something to play devil's advocate. But it was actually, a lot of people got in touch about that. Sorry, vegan. A lot of self-doubting vegans suddenly.
And I know you also ask your listeners to send in their questions and things. And I think you have an email address where people can do that. So if anyone does want to send you any questions, where can they do that?
We have a Curious Cat via our Twitter, which is @onthelatch. And you can DM us in our Instagram, which is @onthelatchpodcast. And you can email us at onthelatch@googlemail.com.
Amazing. And what is the hope for the future of the podcast? Is it just for fun right now?
Yeah, it really is just for fun. We just really are getting together and hanging out and talking about our problems and talking about our weeks. I think we are, we're getting better every time. We have some really interesting guests. We had Ollie from Years and Years on. We've had MNEK on, and he was really, really interesting. And I think we just want to get more voices involved and just sort of carry on, really. I don't think any of us have got into it to think that we'll be selling out stadiums and selling huge merch and stuff like that. But I don't know. Maybe.
Well, you never know.
You never know.
But I do think it's lovely that you're all just from a place of doing it as a way to form community.
Exactly.
And to get together.
And I've learned so much as well. I think that it's really important. I think it's sometimes easy to forget, but when you are gay, that you kind of forget that there are very many different kinds of gay people, and you have to be an ally to all different kinds of gay men and all different kinds of people in the LGBTQ community. And to be educated every time I go on and someone says, actually, I completely disagree with this and that's why. And you go, oh, yeah, actually, I was being really simplistic or reductive or I was using my personal experience as a sort of blanket term for like all gay experience. And I'm like a white 30-year-old gay man.
Yeah.
Like when it comes down to it, I have it a lot easier than a lot of other people. And it's been really enlightening, actually.
I think one amazing example of kind of like checking privilege, I guess, and, listening to other people in the community and realizing that we're all different is the UK Black Pride that has just happened.
It was really, really great.
And we are going to talk about that a lot later in the show. We're going to be talking all about Pride. But yeah, I just wanted to bring that up there because I think it's such an amazing thing.
Absolutely.
So we'll loop back to that later. But we're going to play a game very shortly.
Great.
But before we do that, let's have a little bit of music. This is Not in California.
We have not allowed ourselves to comprehend what failure might mean for us. Is it a comfort or a curse? The knowledge that we could have avoided all this?
The birds all died and the trees caught fire and the government, it called us crazy. We built a big world, then we watched it all burn, 'cause the television made us lazy. It didn't seem true when the power lines blew. Yeah, the heroin, it made us hazy. I looked up at the clouds as I was freaking out. God save me. We're not in California.
just tried, but the politicians keep on screaming. I'd like a roadmap, like to turn the clock back, but the internet, it keeps on freezing. Drank up every bottle and I smoked some marijuana. I was hoping I could find some peace. I looked up at the clouds, the light was peeking out. I can't believe it. We're not in California.
Ready for a game, Guy?
I am always ready for a game.
Amazing.
I'm gay.
We are going to play some queers throughout the years.
Okay.
So in this game, I have five facts in front of me about LGBT plus history.
Okay.
Some of these are completely true.
Okay.
And some of them have just been fabricated in my little imaginative mind.
Fine. Okay.
And you have to decipher which ones are which.
Okay, I'll try really hard. I'm really competitive with these sort of things.
How are you on LGBT history?
I think I'm pretty decent.
Yeah?
But
I mean,
I'm probably going to really prove myself wrong. I'm definitely better on like UK LGBT
okay.
history. Sometimes, you know, when Derek Barry was like, nobody died at Stonewall, I was like, oh.
Well, interestingly, I have a bone to pick with this whole thing going
okay.
viral. Because two people did die at Stonewall, but it was kind of on... The event triggered a heart attack, which caused a car crash, which killed two people. And people did die at Stonewall, but it's arguable whether it was the actual
yes.
riot that caused it.
Whether it was, yeah, just fake
destruction. Just to be pedantic.
I'm glad to know that because I did feel very stupid when everyone's mocking this drag queen for being, like, dumb. And
yeah.
I'm like,
oh, that was me.
Sorry.
Well, let's see how you do with these.
Okay.
So you said you're good at kind of UK-based LGBT history.
I hope so.
All right, let's start with ancient Greece then.
Okay. Great. Cool. Excellent.
Olive oil became a popular export from ancient Greece, not as a foodstuff, but rather as a lubricant. Its worldwide use in kitchens today can still be traced back to gay men making it popular by using it for anal sex.
I would say that's true because, at the very least, it would be very good for, like, wrestling, which I know that they would have done in ancient
Greece. But they also enjoyed a lot of gay sex
yes.
in ancient Greece.
So I think it would make sense if maybe they oiled up for wrestling and then obviously realized that it could be...
Oh, this is useful for other
yeah,
things.
Yeah, segues.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say true, but that's very expensive.
Olive oil.
Well, I mean, maybe it wasn't then, but like good olive oil will cost quite a lot of money.
And I feel like the caveat of just, you know, talking about this is that I just want to say that people shouldn't use olive oil as
no.
lube because it will disintegrate a condom.
Yes.
So
don't
that.
Don't actually do it.
But people did indeed used to do it. And this is, in fact... True.
Great.
So well done.
Thank you very much.
You're off to a great start.
Don't try this at home.
So, you know, the next time you are, you know, making yourself a nice salad, bit of olive oil, just think you've got...
God bless you for thinking I eat salad.
All right, our next one. Many people say that using they-them pronouns is difficult and grammatically inaccurate. However, he and she pronouns are actually a relatively new addition to the English language and didn't even exist up until the
1800s. I would say that is false because I would say that people like... I'm just thinking of like Shakespeare,
stuff,
you know. There's definite gender pronouns in Shakespeare.
I think so too.
So previous to, I mean, I wonder if the fact is true, but the date is incorrect.
Maybe.
So I'm going to say false.
You're going to say false. Yeah. Well, I'm sorry to tell you that is incorrect. I'm also confused by this because, I mean, I've trusted the internet that this is indeed true. But supposedly this is true. But I'm wondering if we then later changed or added pronouns to things, or maybe we just imagined pronouns in Shakespeare,
That kind of shows how irrelevant pronouns are completely.
Yeah.
You just know that he's referring to he or she or they because, you know, it's Julia or Romeo.
I find it fascinating that people think it's grammatically inaccurate or difficult.
I really
don't think it is at all.
As if all our lives, you know, our parents haven't been like, who are they?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Who are they?
Who's that? Yeah, exactly.
It's absurd to me if people actually think about it. And also, you know, be a certain type of person, you can call their car a she, or if they have a boat, if they're that kind of person. But like heaven forbid, they have to like reappraise a person.
Yes.
It's baffling to me.
I mean, with animals, I do it all the time as well.
Yeah.
When you're in the zoo, you don't know the genders of the animals.
No. Although someone once was like, all dogs are boys and all cats are girls. I can't remember what that was in. I think I believed that for a couple of years of my childhood.
I do tend to call a lot of dogs good boys.
Yeah, good boys.
I do go to that. I will admit that.
And cats are bitches.
All right. Okay. Our next one. Charles Dickens wrote his famous character, Ebenezer Scrooge, based on the judge that sentenced two of his homosexual friends to death. He believed that everybody should have a chance at redemption and that even the judge could change if he allowed himself to have a little empathy.
That's very interesting.
Mm.
I'm not a huge Dickens fan. I mean, that he was a bit of an arsehole to women. But
Dickens was?
Yeah.
Was
yeah,
he now?
Yeah, he was horrible. He had many affairs on his neglected wife. Sorry,
Charles.
This is going historical.
Naughty Charles.
I will say true.
You think it's true?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it is false.
I mean, I've got the two literature questions wrong, and this is just really embarrassing.
However, I did deliberately trip you up here because there is an element of truth to this. So the truth was that Charles Dickens, well, even if he is a shit to women, apparently...
if you were related to him. He had a lot of illegitimate children. There are a lot of you.
Apparently, he was renowned for being an historical LGBT+ ally, because not only did he write secret queer characters into his books, but also he visited the last two people to ever be hanged for homosexuality in prison.
That
he didn't
is
know them. He just went and visited them in prison. So I guess shout out to Charles.
Yeah,
but you're saying he's not
for
a
being
nice...
an ally to the community. But
even
like,
if you're
I
misogynist.
withdraw the shout out for all womankind.
Sure. Okay, so you're two wrong, one right. You can claw this back.
I'm going to try.
I believe in you. There is not even one single record of Jesus or Muhammad ever speaking out against or preaching against homosexuality.
True.
Straight in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I found that today, and I was like, you know what? I feel like we need to to bring this up because I feel like there's a lot of misrepresentation of what was actually said, and when we talk about
the
holy books, etc., and it's just always taken out of context.
And when we talk, you know, we'll talk about Pride and Lent later, but the placards that like people hold up with like a half a sentence from a Bible.
Yeah.
It's obviously that looks like someone was saying this mean thing until you read the sentence that came before it and the sentence that came after it. It's all context.
Yeah.
And anyway, even if it was homophobic, it's like, we're not anymore. Don't be anymore.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
It's like, stop clinging to this thing.
Yeah.
Like, there weren't cars in the Bible. You drive cars.
Is that your comeback?
Yeah, that's yeah, car. Yeah, exactly. Give me a car.
I love it.
Put some sandals on and go, you know, no.
Okay, you're 2 out of 4. So if you get this last one,
I win.
We consider that a win. Okay, our final one is: it has never been illegal to be gay in Japan. Historically, a law against homosexuality was tried to be put into place, but samurai warriors seized the capital and forced its government's hand. After taking control of the city for almost 19 days, they finally relented and agreed that the law wouldn't be passed.
That's a really detailed fact.
It is, isn't it?
For it to be false. But I think it's false.
You do? Why? Is it the samurai warriors?
Because I feel like with certain really positive developments in Asia in the last couple of years, I feel like I was reading things saying that this is the first country in Asia to mm-hmm. do this, or this is the first. So I wonder if... I'm going to say false, and I think I'm going to regret it.
You are going to say false, and you would be absolutely correct.
Yes.
Again, this one was based on truth.
Okay.
The truth was that Japan has the shortest lived law against homosexuality in the world. It only lasted for 10 years between 1873 and 1883. And it was samurai warriors.
So interesting.
Because they have a tradition of same-sex relationships. They were very against it and mounted a strong opposition and got it overturned within 10 years.
God, what a boring 10 years, though.
Yeah, very boring 10 years.
If you grew up before and you were like, oh, oh God.
This is over yet.
You'd have such a great party, though, 10 years after.
You would. Amazing, amazing samurai party. So you got 3 right and 2 wrong. So that is a win.
I'll give my English literature degree back, but sure. But I know Japan, well. So that's cool.
You did well. I'm proud of you. All right, let's have a little bit more music. This is Icy, Kim Petras.
Nobody harder, never ever felt stronger. Thought that we would last forever. Gave me something to believe in. Thought that you were all I needed. Look at me, I'm still breathing.
presents.
Access all areas.
Our lovely Stephen isn't with us, he's away, but we've flown in someone even sexier. Jack Fowler, cheers. Welcome! We got very excited because we've got another guest, Ricky Garnaccio!
Oh, you're
hello, Ricky! I'll just call you Ricky.
Every year.
We loved you on Geordie Shore. Do you miss not doing it?
Nope.
That was quick.
I have to say,
Ricky, I loved you when you did Celebrity Big Brother. I mean, that must have been one hell of an experience for you. You're glad it's over?
It was boring.
Every Thursday from 6 p.m. on FUBAR Radio.
Let's talk about Pride.
Let's.
I mean, it's been a big year this year. Obviously, it's the 50-year anniversary of the Stonewall Riots, which is, you know, such a monumentous occasion in LGBT plus history. And there's been, you know, events happening all around the world. But obviously here in London, our hometown, there has been, I think, after last year where we had those TERFs, trans exclusionary radical feminists, I hate to call them feminists, who kind of seized the parade. I think there's been a lot of kind of... I don't know what the word is. There's tension.
Tension. Yeah, there is tension.
I think. But I think this year, a lot has been done to kind of fix that. Or you know, nothing's going to be fixed overnight. But
no.
I think steps have been taken in the right direction. And I have a lot of thoughts on this. But before I jump into my thoughts, I just kind of want to hear what you think about Pride and London Pride and just Pride in general, I guess.
Well, First of all, I'm incredibly glad it exists, obviously. I think, you know, whenever I go, I feel really celebratory and so pleased to be amidst these people and celebrating everyone's differences and everyone's similarities. And it always really saddens me to see people, you know, people that we were talking about before, the placards, just this sort of like fundamental Christian saying that we shouldn't exist. But also it's most hurtful when it's people who you feel that you should be able to be part of your community.
Yeah.
So when there are people who say that they're there for Pride to be allies, but they're actually only there to support a very tiny faction, and you know they don't believe that the T should be in the LGBTQ plus, and they shouldn't. The trans flag is not relevant to them. Like that really it upsets me. It does,
yeah.
And I think sometimes, you know, that's why on Twitter, for example, you know, I value debate, but I also value blocking and muting.
Yes,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
sometimes
yeah,
you just have to, I sometimes just have to sort of save myself from that. From that argument with people, I can't. I will defend people when I can. But also, it's also just like I don't even want to give you the air of publicity on my Twitter feed. I'm not going to quote tweet you and say, "Look at this woman saying this." I have no time for these people.
Absolutely,
it's a time for celebration and unity. And I just think if you can't join in on that, then don't come. It's just sad.
Absolutely.
It hurts my feelings. It does. It's awful.
I think one thing, you know, over the past couple of years, I think there have been certain communities and certain issues around Pride. I mean, the whole corporations thing is one big thing. There's so many people, and I'm kind of mixed about it because I think there is a place for corporations, and corporations are important. They help fund it. They help raise money for charity. They do all these things. But
absolutely.
I also understand why people don't want corporations there. And then obviously there's the trans issue. You know, so many trans people feeling kind of left behind by Pride, especially with what happened last year.
Yeah.
And then there's also people of color, and particularly the black community, who have felt kind of othered and left out of Pride. And I think the amazing thing that happened this year was, instead of some big corporate brand leading the parade was led by Stonewall, UK Black Pride, and Mermaids, which
was
a
really
trans
important
charity. And I think the amount of flag, the amount of trans flags, the amount of the alternative Pride flag with the additional black and brown stripe to be inclusive of people of color, the amount of those flags absolutely everywhere, on every single corner, there were people waving those two flags. I think more so than the rainbow flag.
Yeah, I really did see a lot. I mean, it just even in the media coverage later, it was so much more prominent. And also I felt that what was more prominent was a presence of allies who aren't necessarily members of the LGBTQT community, who just sort of felt that they should be there.
Yes.
And, you know, just seeing Jade from Little Mix and Leanne from Little Mix.
So lovely to see.
So lovely. Yeah. And, you know, the next day they were saying, if you're going to be an ally, you have to walk the walk and talk the talk. You can't kind of like phone it in and say that you're an ally in a media interview one time.
Yeah, absolutely.
You have to do something about it. And I really saw a lot of people, a lot of my friends on Instagram and Facebook saying, here we are in Trafalgar Square supporting our friends. And I thought that just felt like it was happening more this year than before. And I really loved that as well.
It's so, so important. Let's talk about UK Black Pride. Mm. This is something that Lady Phil launched. Was it 2 years ago?
Yeah, I think. Well, it was in Vauxhall before. So
yes,
yeah.
And then it moved.
So yeah. So now it's in Haggerston, which was handily very near my house. So yeah, it's not that new, but it felt really. It is new, but it weirdly felt like it was established and sort of sorted.
Yeah.
Like it didn't feel like slapdash or like a newly realised thing. I went in and felt instantly welcome, and it was very organised, and you know, there are talks over there, music over there, bar over there, and I would love UK Pride to be a little bit like that. I'm glad there's a march. I'm thrilled the march exists, but I would love it to sort of culminate in a sort of a walled area like Haggerston Park, where you get search and arrival, you go in, you get a drink, you go listen to a talk, you listen to some music, and I just felt very safe.
I think one thing that I've heard a lot of people saying is that the sense of community that came out of it. And that was the first thing that resonated with me as well. Seeing so many people, you know, I didn't actually go, unfortunately, but like reading on social media and I went through the hashtag and everything, and so many people, and it just seemed like there was this overwhelming sense of togetherness.
Yes.
Which I think is often lost. And it's not a criticism of London Pride.
No.
But I do think it's lost, you know, in a big city with so much happening and so much. It's all over the place.
Of course.
And then suddenly it's all together in one place, and it's everyone coming together to celebrate their queerness and their blackness, obviously. And I just think that's amazing. And it frustrates me because I've seen a lot of people on, you know, social media saying, oh, so white people aren't welcome. And it's like you are completely missing the point.
Completely
missing the point.
I felt so welcome. I think really the rule is with anything, if you're a straight person going to main Pride on Saturday, and if you're a white person going to Black Pride on Sunday, just, you know, you go there open as an ally. As long as that's what's in your heart, then you are completely welcome. I did not feel like anyone looked at me for a moment and thought, "What? He's white. Why should he be there?"
Yeah.
I felt really, really welcome. As long as you're just sort of there to respect and to learn and to have a nice time. And I think that's all that really matters.
Yeah.
And it was so much fun.
I think the one thing that I really would have loved to have been there for was Lady Phil leading the chant, which When We Rise, I think, was it?
Yeah.
And just seeing the crowd all chanting that together and Lady Phil getting so emotional.
It was amazing.
On stage. And I just see so much gratitude as well from her, from everybody who attended, who just suddenly have this space. And yes, they've created it.
Yeah.
But just, you know, that overwhelming feeling of gratitude for we have this space and we're so grateful for it and we're here together. It's something really, really special.
It really was. Like Twitter the next morning, you could just sort of just, it just felt, you just were glowing all day from these people just like celebrating everyone. I mean, when I, having been there, it was just joyous.
Yeah.
It was lovely.
And what do you think I'm asking, are you a white man, but you know, what the future of UK Black Pride, do you think it will continue to grow?
I think it will continue to grow. I think that there's always a temptation that someone will approach them and say, we'll give you a bundle of money. And if you do X, Y, and Z, and they'll say, it'll still be Black Pride though. It'll just be sponsored by X and
suddenly it'll change.
But I think there's an integrity to it that they'll have a sort of measured response to saying yes to the right things and then just sort of maintaining. So you can grow and succeed, but keep the integrity and keep the core ethos of what it's about. So, you know, a little bit more money is always welcome. It means you can work on the infrastructure and get even better acts and get another bar in because the queues were long.
Yeah, sure.
Get a few extra toilets. And, you know, so it's, you know, growth is always good, but I think as long as they keep the integrity of it, I think that's all that really matters.
And I think it will. I definitely think it will keep that. I've also seen like some, you know, amazing people in the community. Charlie Craggs is one that comes to mind. She's an amazing trans activist. She's been on this show. And she, you know, she released a clothing line where 100% of the profits were going to UK Black Pride.
Right.
And I think just seeing things like that from the community, it's about people supporting each other, and I'd like to see more of that scene going forward, and you know, even to take a little bit of responsibility myself. I'd love to, you know, do something to support it myself. I just think it's an amazing thing, and I just hope it continues to grow and be the success that it has
been. Me too. I hope so too. I think it was a really great day, and you just leave feeling buoyant. It was great.
We are gonna jump into some sex confessions very shortly, but before we do that, do you have any last thoughts on Pride as a whole? You know, we are at this, we're at 50 years now of, you know, it becoming from literally a riot essentially to where it's come today. And I do think we've gone on this amazing journey, and it's transformed and it's changed. But, you know, what is the future for Pride? Is it just going to be this corporate? Will it just be diluted and diluted and diluted until it's just nothing but this corporate entity? Or do you think, you know,
I do worry about that, because I think it's very persuasive for a brand to say, here's some money and we'll support you and we'll stick to your ethos. It's very persuasive. But I think there has been a turning point in the last couple of years of people sort of seeing through the corporations, and the ones who are allies and the ones who aren't. And I think that moving forward, I think that we've kind of reached fever pitch of how many we can fit in.
Yes.
And I think
so. It might go the other way.
Yeah, I think it might go the other way. And it's always about kind of trying to find that mix of party versus protest. And I think I feel that this year's was a pretty decent compromise between the two.
Yeah,
it's about finding that like perfect
and keeping it as well, because we can find it and lose it.
Yeah, exactly. Like we could have gone protest for 50 years, and then next year it would be party. So yeah, it's about finding the balance and keeping it. And making money, but also not selling out. It's a conundrum.
It's a tricky one. It's a tricky one. But no, I think I echo everything you just said. I think, you know, and I think, I hope we will.
I hope so. We will.
Right, shall we have some music? Let's have a little bit of, I love this. This is Wish You Were Gay.
Picture this, you and me in the morning, kissing over the coffee you're pouring. It could be like that every day. Hated that, I wish you were. Hoping that I'm a better replacement for the guys that you're always out chasing. Or should I accept things I can't change? Hated that, I wish you were. I wish you were gay so you could just hold me. Call me your babe instead of your homie. I'd forgotten, but I feel the same. Hate that I still wish you were. You walk up and I'm dreading the small talk. With your boyfriend, he's chatting my ear off. So I lie and I say I can't stay. Hate it, I still wish you were. I wish you were gay so you could just hold me. Call me your babe instead of your homie. Be so good.
are you ready for some sex confessions?
I am.
Okay, so thank you so much to everyone who has sent these in. If you would like to send any in for future shows, you can do that by emailing callum@foobarradio.com, and we keep it anonymous as well, so we won't read out your name or your details or anything on air. Should we dive right in?
Let's.
Okay, our first one. How do you find bottoming more comfortable? I want to do it, but keep finding it too painful. Oh, I mean, I could go on.
Yeah, we've talked about this for hours. Olive oil. No.
Don't do that.
No. I think it's a really interesting question. I think, but the first time I bottomed, I was like, oh my God, I'm going to die.
Sure.
I was like, I thought I was going to die. I was like, this is what's going to kill me.
This is going to take me out.
I couldn't believe that, like, someone, like, some doctor would be calling my mother to say that I'd literally been, like, fucked to death. But I think it's about, it is about practice, and it is about relaxation, and it is about trusting the other person. And depending on the kind of, you know, poppers are useful for some people.
Yeah.
A good lubricant. You know, some people who've never done it before just don't
try without lube.
Yeah,
which never is try
obviously
without lube.
A terrible, silly terrible idea. You know, depending on your age and your kind of like interactions with alcohol, a glass of wine.
Sure.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There are all kinds of tactics, and I think it's just practice. And also maybe buy like a small toy that you can practice on yourself with.
Yes, absolutely.
And you can, in theory, increase the sizes with each practice session.
Well, that's
expensive.
that's actually something I did. I practiced with a small toy beforehand. And the first, I mean, I have had very painful anal sex. But the first, when I lost my virginity, it actually didn't hurt. And I think it was because I practiced.
Yeah.
And also, we literally took like 3 hours building up to it. We
yes.
went so
that's
slowly.
The thing. If you just put it in, then obviously it hurts.
Yeah.
It's about the process.
But I think your answer is the perfect one, though, because I think, you know, so many people say, do this thing. And you might try that thing and it doesn't work.
Yeah.
It doesn't fix the problem. And it's not about that. It's about finding what works for you.
Absolutely.
And working through it. And, you know, and it does come with time. You know, speak to any gay man. It comes in the
There's
end.
A reason we do it.
Yeah, exactly that. All right, let's do the next one. I was once receiving a blowjob and I somehow managed to dislocate the guy's jaw. How did you do that? Like, you must have been...
Maybe he closed his legs, like, too tightly in pleasure or something.
Or, like, if you were, like, really, I guess, forcing yourself against them, you could have, like, bashed their jaw with your hip bone, perhaps.
Yeah, I suppose that's the thing about if you kind of switch up the aggression in oral sex or in sex at all. I mean, it's you have to sort of be aware of the other person. Like, they're not just, like, this sort of, like, sheath for you to, like, be...
They're not a sex toy.
You know, you just be aware of these people. I mean, a friend of mine at university was receiving a blowjob, and his banjo string snapped because it was such a vigorous...
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I've had a lot of stories like this.
And he bled in, you know, and mouth and, like... Ugh. But, you know, just be aware of the other person's limits.
Absolutely.
You know, it's exciting sometimes. You get carried away, but, like, you don't want to hurt anyone.
Absolutely.
Unless they want to be in a sort of consensual and mutually agreed fashion.
As long as everybody's agreed and consenting.
Exactly.
But yeah,
God,
you know. And
broke a dislocated jaw.
I think learning to communicate during sex, and I don't mean, like, verbally. It doesn't have to be verbally all the time, but just learning to, like, kind of, like, state what you're happy with, what you're comfortable with, where your limits are. And I'm not saying you have to sit there and make up, you know, sign language or anything like that.
But like, you just like that sort of, like, you know, there's a sort of range of, like, even just moans. It's like, that's clearly a good moan, and that's clearly a bad moan.
Stop that immediately.
Don't do that anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. in regard, I mean, I've told this story on air before, but I'm going to do it again. In regards to that, the banjo string thing you mentioned, I first heard that for the first time was a boy I was dating. He had braces. And he had given somebody else a blowjob, and it had got caught in the braces.
Oh my God.
And tore it open, which meant every time he went
Those
down on me
must
on
have
future,
been loose.
I could not get it up because I was
so scared of course,
of getting a kind of injury. So, yeah. That was the thing that happened.
Oh my God. You know, orthodontia is good, but.
But just be
careful.
Be careful. I think we probably have time for one more. Let's do... Okay. I had sex with my Uber driver in the Uber.
Okay.
I hear this all the time. Oh, I got hooked up with my Uber driver. Oh, I didn't have to pay because I got with my Uber driver. How is everyone hooking up with their Uber driver? I just sit in the back in silence.
Yeah, I sit in the back in silence. And also, you know, and I... there's a mechanism to pay.
Yes, it's done for you.
Surely,
it's not like you can...
how did he bypass that? Did he say that he never picked you up in the first place? Wouldn't that get him in trouble? Exactly.
Yeah.
Does he give? Like, what's the politics? If it was a bad lay, do you give him 5 stars anyway? Because the Uber rating is obviously so important. Also, I mean, it sounds sexy, it sounds fun, but also I'm very aware of the fact that I'm locked in this person's car.
Like, logistically.
Yeah. Also, what time is it? Where does he park?
Yeah.
So, yeah, someone told me yesterday that they were on their way to a hookup in an Uber and had sex with the Uber driver and then we got dropped off for the hookup. And I'm like, that sounds so fun, blah, 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 blah. But I'm also, like, exhausting and...
Yeah,
didn't you get sweaty in this car and the kind of like faux leather seats on the back of an Uber?
I just don't think I have it in me to have these kind of like spontaneous hookups.
No, neither do I.
And I'm not saying I'm a prude and I don't have an exciting sex life because I try to,
but it's difficult. Some people like to sort of like look at each other and then they're down the alleyway and I'm like, cool,
great,
good for you. God, but like people look at me and I'm like, I don't know. Either I don't notice. I'm like, why is that person looking at me?
Yeah.
And that wouldn't be like, you know.
I was on a trip about a month ago with a couple of guys, and we were all staying in the same hotel for this trip.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the other guys, we all kind of agreed we'd go up to the room for like 10 minutes because we didn't have long.
Okay.
To like quickly like freshen up, like fix your hair, that kind of thing. So we all go upstairs for 10 minutes and we all come back down. And one of the guys had like managed to meet somebody and have sex with them in that time. And I was like... Part of me was like, are you lying? But I really don't think he was.
Well, part of me is like, that's so cool. And part of me is like, 10 minutes, really? God, like, you know, we talked earlier about like, kind of like, you know.
Building up
the process. Like, but that's like a look down into the hotel room and in
quick
out.
One,
like, that's
boom,
not
done.
Pleasurable for me. It's, you know, sexy. It's kind of like, that is kind of titillating to me. But God, like, I'd be like, 10 minutes.
10 minutes.
At the very least, I'd be 10 minutes late as well.
I like an overnight. I do. I like an overnight.
Same. I get really annoyed when they're like, bye.
Yeah, I'm like, no, cuddle. Yeah. Cuddle time.
And you were in a hotel as well. It's like,
yeah, like
great.
The perfect opportunity.
Someone will make the bed tomorrow, but isn't me. What a pleasure.
I was getting so carried away with this. That I realized we're right at the end of the show. Oh. So tell us again about the podcast. Where can people listen?
People can listen to it on iTunes and Spotify. Just basically follow the links on Twitter. So just go to Twitter at On The Latch and go from there.
Amazing. Well, I've enjoyed chatting to you.
It's been a pleasure.
So
thank
you. I'm definitely
going
to go listen and I can't wait to hear more of your thoughts.
I mean, there are a lot.
You've been an amazing guest. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'm going to play you out with a little bit of Boys in the Street, A Great Big World.
When I was younger, my daddy told me I would never amount to nothing special. He'd come at me from every angle. He'd say, you're the last thing I wanted, the last thing I need. How am I gonna answer when my friends tell me my son was kissing boys in the street? Try to change me, said I'm embarrassing my country. How could I do this to my family? Do I wanna grow up being lonely? He'd say, we work for our money, we put you in school. Is this how you repay us? Do you think this is cool, my son? Stop kissing boys in the street. My son, stop kissing boys in the street.
Now that I'm older, my daddy's heart's a little warmer, but he still won't hug me like my brother, and he still won't kiss me like my mother. He'd say, you're a part of this family, I made you myself, but the way that you act isn't good for your health, my son. Stop kissing boys in the street, my son. Stop kissing boys in the street.
You've been listening to a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.